Okay. He's on. So last week we said something. We said that we were doing the laws of procreation, Purvu, and we did a Ramah. That's Moshe Rabbeinu's 1500s, who wrote his notes on the Shulchan Aruch Beis Yosef. And he said something that was in just literally a few words, and we analyzed one word last week. And like this, Shulchan Aruch was saying who can be counted, what type of child can be counted for the Puruvu obligation, for the obligation. Every person has an obligation, every male, not female, we discussed that. Every male has an obligation to have a boy and a girl. And we said then that the Ramah said, the Shulchan Aruch did not say these words. The Ramah said, by the way, if the child's a mamzer, we'll discuss that, not now. If the child is a deaf mute or an imbecile or a minor, you fulfill the mitzvah. So we had last week we discussed why a minor. What do you mean? Of course, not a minor. What else? Everyone's a minor when they're first born. That was Chassid's question. And we discussed why there might be a novelty in the ruling of a minor, and any novelty we come up with in the ruling might be an explanation of why the Beis Yosef doesn't say this. Because remember, the Beis Yosef is writing the laws, and the Rambam is adding on, by the way, X, Y, and Z. But usually, it's a custom, not a law. So here, when he's adding on a law, the question becomes, okay, Rabbi Beis Yosef, do you not agree with this or not? Now, again, every source for the Ramah, usually in these type of cases, are universal. So the question is, okay, Ramah, it's a universal source. Everyone agrees. Beis Yosef, why didn't you say the same thing? So last week, go to RabbiHubba.com on YouTube, on Spotify, on and on just .com, and you could guide to last week's class. And what the novelty of a minor, a child of one day old, fulfilling the mitzvah, maybe. Today, we're going to go a little bit backward. We're going to go back the next couple of weeks on this. It's all one word Ramah. And he just said with this, a cheresh and a shoita fulfills the obligation. That means if someone gives birth to a child, and the child in the old days, a deaf mute child, pre Helen Keller, was incapable of anything, and the shoita is literally, I think the word is imbecile, right? I don't know what they call it. I think that's what they used in English, imbecile. I don't know. It's not even the word people use today. But a person who's just not fully capable of many things, that child does fulfill the mitzvah. That's what the Ramah says. Again, the Shulchan Aruch did not say anything about it. The Ramah added on, by the way, you fulfill your child, you fulfill that child will count toward the two children you need. And the question now is, why yes, why no? What's going on here? So we quoted yesterday this rear sefer that we sometimes quote in this class here. This rear sefer referred to as the Minchas Chenach. And the Minchas Chenach gave an explanation. The Minchas Chenach explanation was simple. The fact is, you need to qualify as a child that counts the fulfillment of the mitzvah. What you need is a child that can physically produce other children. So he said, it's not based on the level of brain cells. It's not based on the level of maturity. It's not based on the level of any of these things. The fact is, a deaf mute child, even pre Helen Keller, was physically capable of having a baby. That's not a problem. An imbecile, in most cases, is physically capable of having a child. That's what the Minchas Chenach says. He says, you wonder why these children count? Because they're physically capable of having a child. And they said, well, there's another detail. You have to have someone who has some shyness. What's the word shyness in English? College? Is that word?
Circle?
Shyness. You have to have some connection. Connection, something to do with mitzvahs. She said, yeah, you should know. This is the Minchas Chenach talking. I want to have two conditions. Condition number one is satisfied because the child can physically have a baby. Condition number two is, by the way, when it comes to connecting to mitzvahs, you want to produce a child that can have mitzvahs, fine. You know why? Because we have a law, as Minchas Chenach says, that we are not to feed any of these type of children non-kosher food. That means the non, let's say a kid is an imbecile. He's not really obligated to mitzvahs. He doesn't have the brain capacity that he's considered an adult. He remains as an infant, even when he's 17 years old. So if he's doing something, is he obligated to mitzvahs? You have to give a 17-year-old who has no brain cells, sadly to say, an imbecile child, a little bit extra? No.
These questions are not mentally disabled.
I don't, yeah, English, I think, sobriety and imbecile, that's the only one I have in my head.
So yes,
It's a weird word. Nobody used that today, right?
no.
So we're going to do, what'd you say?
Developmentally disabled.
Developmental disabled. Fine. We'll do DD, just as easy. So the DD child, if he wants to do a mitzvah or not, yeah, you can give him the lulav. You don't have to give him the lulav. Let's say the DD child is about to eat treif. Okay, there's a concept. Maybe you don't have to prevent him, but you can't give it to him. That means when this child is not obligated to mitzvahs because he's a minor child, he's a minor. Every minor is the same way. Technically, I don't have to raise Michael's kid. So if Michael's kid is about to eat treif, God forbid, and the kid's under 12 years old, under 13 if it's a boy. Do I have an obligation to stop the child from doing it? Not so clear if I have an obligation. The father might have an obligation. What's my obligation? I can't feed it to them. I can't be proactive in that game. Proactive, no. Non-active, yeah, maybe. So he says, Mechaschinov, that by the way, you can't be proactive in giving a DD child treif. You can't hand him treif for food. So if you can't hand him treif food, he has some connection to the concept of mitzvahs. He's physically capable of producing a child. Therefore, Rama says, that child's going to count. Again, the Shulchan Aruch didn't quote it. We're going to go through this simple statement that Mechaschinov understood it so easy. So there's a question that became famous by the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer died in 1840. This is probably a history when it happened. And there was a child that was a DD child. But in the old days, they didn't have what we have today, thank God, with this medina of child services, like pre-Helen Keller. So if a child wasn't there, was a DD child, it was going to be very difficult to do this. So they found out, his family, was all in the Chassam Sofer, they had a thing, that they had this, not a hospital, like a rehabilitation center, that they said they could move the child along faster than the child would be at home. There was no services back, no thoughts of what to do, no physical therapy ideas back then. So if the child stays home, the child will remain in this state. But you know what? Maybe send them there, figure it out. But there's a problem, because who do you think ran in 1820 in Prussia? Who ran these things? The nuns and whatever you call them. What's the Hebrew, the male version of the nun? The priests. They were running these things. You're going to send it over there. We have two problems. First of all, maybe potential idolatry. Second of all, for sure, one thing, no kosher food. There was no kosher food services back then. That became a question that Chassam Sofer had a long thing about answering. Are you allowed? And by the way, this applies nowadays as well. I saw an interview a couple of years ago by a Chabad Svegara, by a Chabad guy, who, I don't know why I'm saying this, he said something. He had a daughter who was not emotionally stable. She went up and down. What do you call it? I forgot the words.
Bipolar,
but like serious. And attempted, you know, certain things on her life. So it was a scary situation. He wanted to send his kids to a certain place. And he heard that in California, there's a Chabad that runs a California place, paper for people who are not so, what do we do with them? So he called his rabbi. He's saying on this on tape, this guy. He called his rabbi and said, well, you know, I want to get to this place by Chabad, but I heard there's a place in Arizona. He said, there's no such thing as kosher food in this situation. This is potentially saving someone's life. You don't wait 5 weeks for an opening. You right away send. So clearly, my point is, clearly, if it's a life and death situation, everything we're discussing is irrelevant. That's obvious. Kosher food is irrelevant on life and death. We're not talking about life and death. The kid can live. The kid is a DD type of kid. If he goes into this program, he'll develop. They'll have the proper resource to make him develop. And the Chassam Sofer has a long question of the laws. It's the laws of education on the child. What are the obligations of a child? Now, there is a Trumas Hadeshim. In this sense, earlier, way earlier, a few hundred years earlier. The Trumas Hadeshim, when he's talking about education on a child, not your own child, someone else's child, he said, you know what, you got to stop a guy from eating treif? Because people have something we know about called habits. Habits form very quickly. So if you're going to allow this kid to continue to eat McDonald's at 7, 8, 9, and 10, when he hits 13, not going to be easy to stop the kid. So therefore, we have an obligation as a society, as for sure as a parent, as a society, to prevent children under the age of 13 from violating major sins, because we're afraid that they're going to get to that level. That's what the Truman Sedation says. You want to weird. Otherwise, why am I obligated to stop a three-year-old from eating treif? A three-year-old's not obligated to any mitzvahs. Three-year-old has no obligation to live 13. Who cares? Let the kid do what he wants. Let the kid, Shabbos is different because there's a special pasuk by Shabbos. But anything a kid's doing under the age of 13, let him do what he wants. When he grows up, we'll take care of him. The answer is we're afraid of habits. But they all ask a question on the Trumas Hadeshah, Rabbi Trumas Hadeshah, and why are you saying because eventually he'll lead to it? What about the out without the eventual lead to it? Without the eventual lead to it, you're permitted to allow him to eat McDonald's? The Trumas Hadeshah is saying you can't let a 9, 10, 11-year-old kid eat McDonald's because when he's 13, he won't be able to stop. And at 13, he's got to stop. He's 13 years old. So don't let the 9-year-old because we're afraid when he turns 13. What about the kid who's 9, who when he turns 13 won't be obligated? The DD type of children. That's what the later commentators ask on the Trumas Hadeshim. Mm-hmm. Like Rabbi Trumas Hadeshim from the 1400s. If you believe the only obligation for education under the age of 13 is because what they will eventually turn out to be, then you are clearly implying that someone under the age of 13 who will never develop into a child that is obligated to mitzvahs, then you don't have to separate them from eating McDonald's at the age of 5. Because they're never going to be 13 years old in Jewish proper law, mature enough to be obligated to the mitzvahs. That's what they all say. And they bring this down. When the Chassam Sofer comes out saying, you better be careful, better be careful, they tell the Chassam Sofer, well, Chassam Sofer, you know, there's this Trumas Hadesh in there that seems to me that the only time we have to worry about allowing kids or feeding kids actively non-kosher food is because they'll get the 13. But these are kids going to these organizations. Again, it's going to depend on the level of the kid and on the level of the care he's going to get. But we're talking about a kid that's going to go into one of these organizations and he's going to learn, let's say, how to physically get along, how to ride a bike, but never get to the point where we're going to say he's mature enough to be obligated to mitzvahs, then why do we care if he's eating treif? If the only reason to prevent him from being treif is because he'll get the 13.
So, how come the Trumas Hadesh didn't talk about the Kabbalah and the spiritual? And
fascinating. It is fascinating. Yeah, because we once discussed years ago, maybe before everyone here was in this class, there's a Rav Chaim Kanievsky that says, and it goes by wartime. Good question. The Meshech Chachman, the Ur Sameach who Charles always loves. Uh-huh. We know that when you do an Aveira, you not only violate God's word, you create some type of negative atmosphere in the world. Global warming, as we like to say, is not based on underarm spray. It's based on people violating the laws nonstop. And as the world sinks into spiritual decay, so does the physical world sink into decay. So if you want to help the world on global warming, if you believe in global warming, keep Shabbos. One of the quotes I like to say, you want to stop global warming? Stop keeping mitzvahs. Now, it's what about, so one of the things occurs is when someone eats non-kosher food, Costco's right, it's detrimental to the man's neshama. That's my answer. And that's open. If a person eats non-kosher food, Rav Chaim Kanievsky is not the only one. He made it because people got it together. What about someone is forced to eat non-kosher food? A classic example. Someone God puts on deathbed, and the doctor said, the only way to save this guy is to give him ham sandwich.
Get double ham, get twice
ham. And not only do we tell the guy, okay, we require him to eat it. Save a life. Save a life comes first. So someone asked Rav Chaim Kanievsky, okay, save a life. What about the secondary factor of the soul being affected? Now, even though everyone's first reaction I see your faces is, he's obligated to eat the food. How can it negatively affect them? It seems to me from many, many, many commentators that there is a negative into the neshama and the soul gets affected because the food itself is poisonous. Even though you have to eat the food, even though you're obligated to eat the food, but you know one thing? The soul is being affected. And this comes up by a Meshech Chachman. He brings the proof for Chaim Kanievsky. Because when the soldiers went to the army in Jewish law, when they were on the battlefield, certain leniencies were allowed to them. One of the leniencies was they're allowed to eat pig. That's the exact phrase, but they're allowed to eat pig. So wait a second. If they're eating pig because it's a law of army, that's fine. What about what happens to their souls? And it becomes a great debate that the Torah seems to quote an extra pasuk that says, don't worry about your soul. So they want to say, when the Torah says, don't worry about your soul, now, is that limited to the army guys? Torah says, army guys, don't worry about it. But the other guy who's got a bit sick in the bed wouldn't have to worry about it. You don't have a special pasuk saying, by the way, don't worry about it. So let's go back here. The Rama says you can fulfill your mitzvah, a pru revu, with a DD child. The Mechaschinach explains why. Because they physically can produce and because they have connection to mitzvahs. Why? Because people are prevented from giving them non-kosher food. So the Mechaschinach explains the Rama. Why does Rama count these children? I give you because they fit both criteria. They can produce and they're attached to mitzvahs. We come along and say, wait a second. It's not so clear that they are attached to mitzvahs. Because according to this Rabbi Trumas Hadesh from 500 years ago, he says the only reason for education is that the future adherence to the mitzvahs, without that, you're not education, which would mean, according to the Trumas Hadesh, we would not tell a person feeding a DD child to don't do that. We don't care because he's going to reach 13. Who cares? So therefore, we don't even understand why should this child count? This child, this DD child has no connection to mitzvahs. He can physically produce a child, but he has no connection to mitzvahs.
So why did they?
Now, what Chassel was saying was, but even without the feeding of the child, we have a separate thing that's saying that, wait a second, what about detrimental to the soul? Which is also a very serious question. Even someone who might be allowed to eat non-kosher food in special circumstances might be negatively affected by the soul. So now Chassel is going to say, wait a second. So why is the Mechassanach saying that the child counts? Now, the Mechassanach first was explaining the Ramah. He can say one of two things. He can say, the Ramah doesn't have to go with the Marilla in this case. The Ramah can say, like the Chassam Sofer, that was the one, true assessment. The Marilla is this source. We can do a couple answers. One is, the Mechassanach can say, I'm giving you the Ramah's theory, but the Beis Yosef argues on this. And that's why the Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote this law. We started with a question last week. Why is Rama adding in these four types of children that can't? A minor, and the two DDs, and the mamza. We'll get to the mamza next week. But what? So why are these two guys being added in? And the question, why did the Shulchan Aruch add it in? Why did the rabbi describe them? The Beis Yosef say, by the way, you fulfill this mitzvah. It must be, on some level, he might argue, or it's just something he didn't want to quote. If you want to say he argues, we now found Mechasinah doesn't openly say this. We're explaining what the Mechasinah is trying to get to. He's saying, let me explain to you why the Ramah says it does count. The Ramah is going to say it does count because it fills two criteria. We're going to say today, in 2024, oh, very good, Rabbi Mechasinah. We always want to defend him. Very good, Rabbi Mechasinah. Because of your theory, if there's a hole in the theory, that would mean that's why the Shulchan Aruch could argue. We have the chart set up again. Ramah adds in these kids. Mechasinah says they have two criteria. We have the Truma Tadashim saying criteria doesn't apply. So now we say, okay, you're right, doesn't apply. That's machlokes between the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch. Which would mean, when the Chassam Sofer was asked this question, do we allow this child to go to the Catholic nursing home in year 18, pre-1840, the Chassam Sofer might have said, I gave you 42 different explanations. That's where he had. That's how great the Chassam Sofer was. I want to add on, it might be an argument in the Shulchan Aruch and Ramah in the laws of be fruitful and multiply. Everyone with me here?
Could you just go back? It seems like you're saying the Shulchan Aruch, i.e. the Beis Yosef, is saying they don't count.
He doesn't
Ramah
say.
Ramah says they do.
Ramah says they do. Oh, he's blank on it. He doesn't comment. So he doesn't say anything. So some want to say, why doesn't he say? Now, one answer could be, he's not writing every law in the history of the world. Maybe. I mean, it's stretched. And Ramah's just saying, by the way, you forgot these guys. But the Beis Yosef would say, I agree. I just forgot to put it down in my next book, which we said last week. Some of these names he put into his original book on his commentary on the Torah. In his, the Beis Yosef wrote two great books, well, one, two. One's called the Beis Yosef. That's a commentary on the Torah. And then which is a lengthy piece. Then he shortened that and made what we call the Shulchan Aruch.
Like 20 years later or 50 years later? Something.
Yeah. So the question would be, in the original one, he seemed to say, by the way, could be these guys count. He quotes the source of the Ramah. And when he came to the Shulchan Aruch, he left it out. So did he leave it out because he changed his mind, what Charles said last week? Or did he leave it out because I'm not just quoting that source for whatever reason, I'm not quoting it. But if he left it out because of a reason, then there's an argument going on.
So both him and Ramah have the same source. In the tour, he quotes a source.
Quotes that source, and the original source here on the story we spoke last week was a Maril.
And what's a Maril mean?
Maril is early. That's an acronym of a guy's name.
Is that the commentary on the Talmud or the Clement?
That's a set of laws.
A set of laws?
Yeah. He's like also early, a lot of customs come from Maril. And he set it up that way. So that's what we have. So
is
approach.
You're reading the Maril right now?
No, but well, the Shulchan, I mean the Shulchan Aruch. And the Shulchan Aruch here, when it says the Ramah, in parentheses it says, who says this idea? It's unbelievable, by the way. Who says this idea? Tell me how close we can get there.
I don't know.
That acronym right there, with on the, again. So the Shulchan Aruch is the square letters.
Yeah.
Ramah's notes are in Rashi script. At the end of Rashi script, someone put in, where does Ramah get this? From the Beis Yosef, quoting the Maril. That means the Ramah's source. Where does he get this? By the way, the Beis Yosef already wrote this. But for some reason, the Beis Yosef in this interpretation, in this succinct interpretation, in this, what do you call this?
Edition,
didn't put it in. So again, you could say the Ramah just, oh, by the way, Beis Yosef, you left it out. I know you agree with it because you wrote it there. And then, okay, we got to figure out why. Or you could say, you know, you left it out because I know in the end you changed your mind. Let me tell you what, we in Ashkenaz, we in Germany, we believe in this stuff still. We're going to hold it as law. And now we today are analyzing, okay, what's the reason why it should work? And then we're trying to figure out if there's going to be a debate between the two of them. So that was approach number one, that potential debate, if there is a debate. The Beis Yosef is silent on it in this edition. Could be he agrees. But if there is a debate, we now discovered a potential debate. They're debating over whether a DD type of child has a connection to mitzvahs. The only connection the child could have is if someone else is prevented from telling him. Because if the DD child is going to take non-kosher food, no one's going to stop him because he's not obligated to mitzvahs. He's like a six-year-old, except for the father with special obligation.
Children with Down syndrome get bar mitzvahed or no?
I think there is a party. I do. Depends on where that, I think it's a...
The level of...
It would depend on the level of development. Because right there, that's a very vague term, right? So there's some that some they get married, right?
Possibly, yeah.
Right, so it would definitely depend on...
Rabbinically married, I'm sure rabbinically.
Right, but some can't. Right? I'm assuming. All these are huge spectrums. I didn't know, right? These not, but Down syndrome and autism is two different things. Right.
I'm saying both spectrums.
All of these things have spectrums. So, yes. So, a kid on the high functioning spectrum would potentially be obligated in a lot of mitzvahs. Again, high function. Depends on where they're holding. A person on the lower end, which I was referring to in the old days, a deaf mute.
With low end.
Extreme low end. Because
they couldn't communicate.
No,
right. So even though they had something upstairs,
they might have been very smart brain-wise, but they were not. They
had time.
So it was no. Yeah, it wasn't easy. And a shoita, which they put, they got together. Chayrish means a deaf mute, but they're always together with a shoita, which again, the shoita really means the word I think you use is imbecile, but DD is a better word. This word means that they're not going to develop anytime soon.
The irony is that blindness is a much more debilitating disability than deaf mutism, but you can participate in so many things just. You know,
right? I don't know. What were they like pre Helen Keller?
Yeah,
it was not an easy situation. I don't know. She was blind, also, right?
She was blind,
right? I don't know. Yeah, so whatever. Anyway, we got approach number one. We're gonna try approach number two. Approach number two is this. Oh, to remind myself what I wrote. Okay. Approach number two is a fascinating approach, and it goes like this. A Jewish woman who is married. Everything we said till now, we're going in a new direction. The only thing we have to know right now is the Ramah says that these children count, and they say it's left it out. Now we're starting over. When it comes to a Jewish married woman, if she has relations and she's married, then the child produced is called a mamzer child. A mamzer child.
Relations without her husband.
Without her husband, yes. She produced a child from somebody else, it's a mamzer child. If she has relations with a non-Jew and produces a child, a quirk in the system, the child is not a mamzer. Now, that's a quirk. Now, what's the reason behind the law? The reason behind the law is because it's an interesting thing. The reason behind the law is because in order to have what we call to produce a child out of wedlock, it has to be with someone that you could potentially marry. So if the woman is with Reuven when she's married to Shimon, since she could have married Reuven at one point, having the child with Reuven within the marriage to Shimon makes the Reuven child a mamzer. But since you cannot, it's impossible in Jewish law to actually marry a non-Jew, whatever the New York Times tells you in the Sunday morning section, there is no event that can happen between a Jew marrying a non-Jew. Whatever communication is going on, it's a nice show, it's a party, and good reason to drink, but it doesn't happen anything. Since nothing could potentially actually occur, the child out of wedlock is not considered a mamzer child. That's what the Gemara in some places hold. In order to produce a mamzer, it has to be produced from someone that was capable of being married to you. If that child produces a mamzer.
In this case, the law of the land doesn't count as the law?
No, definitely not. Now, the Prima Gadol has a wild idea. Prima Gadol, 1800. He says, okay, there is no mechanism on an extreme case by many people for a DD child, old day deaf mute child, to get married. We consider them 3-year-olds, 7-year-olds. A 7-year-old in Jewish law cannot get married. A boy. A boy 7-year-old who goes to, I'm going to marry you, Emmett. It doesn't do anything because you're 7 years old. You're not capable of functioning in the marriage situation. What's required of a marriage? What's required of a marriage is to have an adult capacity brain that can acquire objects. I'm not getting into what a wife is, but I'm saying that's the idea. That has to, if you go to a 6-year-old and he sells you his house for $9, you might have stole the house. I mean, you stole the house because he can't sell you the house for $9. He's a child.
What about those jokes where they have the Shabbos bride and the Shabbos groom in the kindergarten class and they pretend to get married and they're like, oh my God, did they actually just get married?
Right. So when they're that young, there's nothing going on. Because under the age of 13, it's not called capable of getting married. That's a Prima Gadol 1800. Prima Gadol again says that if a mamzer child, that if a non-Jew does not create a mamzer. Why? Because they're not capable of getting married. It's Prima Gadol says, you know what? Based on this logic, I might say that if a woman has an affair with a deaf mute child, a deaf mute, or an imbecile, or a DD, which we said before can physically produce a child, that's what we said, that child might not be a mamzer. Because it's the same idea. They can't get married. They can't get married. Then the child that comes out of them cannot be considered a mamzer child. The wild Prima Gadol. Now, maybe you could say, someone said that if you cannot produce, if the child cannot be if they cannot get married, maybe they don't count for approval either. Which means, if you produce a child, not that the child has to be obligated in mitzvahs, or someone's got to prevent them from being in mitzvahs. A child that counts toward the fulfillment of approval is someone that's capable not only of producing a child physically, but maybe of getting married as well. We want marriages producing children. We understand physically anyone can produce a child, but there are marriages. So now the question becomes, maybe you must produce a child, not like the Michal Sena said originally, that's physically capable of producing a child. No, you have to produce a child that's physically capable of marrying someone who could, in that way of producing a child. If you cannot do that, then potentially you cannot count toward the fulfillment of the mitzvah. So Rama would say, no. If you have the physical capabilities of producing a child, and therefore a child, DD child, can physically produce, I'm going to count that child. But the Beis Yosef might say, wait a second, I thought about this, but it's not based limited to physically producing a child. You have to physically produce a child within the context of a marriage. And since this type of child cannot fulfill this obligation, because he cannot get married, because he's incapable based on the lack of maturity, and those children cannot count. So we now have potentially two, even though the Rama says clearly that a child, a DD child, is going to count. We're saying Shulchan Aruch didn't say this. Why not? Maybe he agrees. Yeah. Or maybe he doesn't agree. Why not? We came up with two potential answers. Potential number one is they're never going to be related to mitzvahs, because in the end, they're never going to grow to adulthood. Therefore, you don't have to stop them from eating trade. You can feed them trade. Who cares? Because they're never reaching adulthood. Or the reason why I might argue is because, wait a second, you need a child that can get married. You have to produce a child not capable of producing a child. Produce a child that's capable of producing a child within the context of marriage. If you cannot produce such a child, if you produce such a child that cannot do it, that won't count for approval. We're going to stop here. We continue this next week, and then we're going to get to the Rama's other case, because he has four cases. The minor, see last week from Behava.com. This week is the DD children. And next week, or we'll see what we get to, is the Mamza child. As a teaser, if someone produces a Mamza, that means an extreme case. There are two ways to do a Mamza. We're going to say this again next week. A Mamzer can marry a Mamzeres. That's a legal marriage. They produce a Mamza. And then you could have a guy who has relations with his sister, and the kid comes out. If a male has relations with his sister, when the Rama says that the Mamzer child works to fulfill the mitzvah to the father, mother's not obligated. So if a father has relations, he's a Mamzer with a Mamzeres, a legal marriage, it's not so far to assume that that child counts for Puruvu. If a Mamzer is obligated on Puruvu, see RabbiHavim.com about a year ago. But what about if the Mamzer, if a regular human being has relations with his sister and produces a boy and a girl? Can he then say, forget the freak show, I did fulfill my mitzvah? Now, the Rama seems to say a mamzer child fulfills the mitzvah. He's vague. Is he referring to a legal marriage or even a prohibited brother-sister situation? And if it's a brother-sister situation, I think we can understand why the Shulchan Aruch is not getting touching that. He's not getting involved. If it's a legal one, we got to talk about it more.
If a Jewish man has relations with a non-Jewish woman, are his kids counted?
Excellent. We're going to go into that. I don't know if Steve heard it. If a Jew with a non-Jew, according to most, the non-Jewish child does not count. Does not count. Because you need a child, like we're saying now, who has a connection to mitzvahs. And that child has nothing to do with mitzvahs. We said before, you need two conditions, according to mitzvahs. Physically capable of producing a child and a connection on some form to mitzvahs. So the child produced from a goy, a non-Jew, does not have that. But that's a long conversation we'll probably get into.
You mentioned having a boy who's a DD or thereabouts. What about if they have a girl?
Same thing.
It's the same thing as far as proof.
To fulfill the mitzvah, a person must produce a healthy boy and a healthy girl. Healthy meaning capable of producing children. Both of them must be.
No, the question, if the girl is capable of it, but mentally not.
That's this Rama we're discussing tonight. They're equal. Because the boy Rama clearly says that it would work. Because again, a girl who's DD can technically produce a child. We might not want that, but she can. And she has a relationship by telling us don't feed her McDonald's. Boy and girl will be equal, correct.
Oh, okay.
Enjoy. Thanks for coming. Next week, we continue with this class, with this theme. We're still in the middle of it. We have more to do next week.